Derek Brandeo says it's a go on the Real Kipper and Bourne show alongside David Sisboomba. We are Nick Kyprios. We are Justin Bourne. We are Sammy McKee. Somewhat of a Leaf edition of our hour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are you shrugging?
What do you want to talk about?
You got any Leaf things to say?
Are we out of Leaf things to say?
I think what I will say is yesterday, I don't think anybody realized how hurt Kipper was playing. And
yeah, what a showing that was.
And the mics go off at 5:54, and he goes, "Holy, I was fighting, boys.
I grinded. I told you, I grinded, and I'm. Can you
still
hear it in my voice?
Still grinding.
You're not. You sound at 90% for.
I vocal will say though, like you know, the sun's out. It's 20 degrees. We're into the. You know, there's no news going on. The fact that Kipper, you know, still in here grinding 2 hours a day shows how much he loves us, Barney.
Is that what it is? Is it us or the paycheck, do you think?
I think you get the paycheck either way.
Good point.
I also had a headache.
Oh!
Nice
here
work.
We go. Here we go.
What?
Here we go.
You made it. You survived.
I didn't mention it, though.
That's good. Good. You're better today, though.
I am. Ish. I am. So wherever you are watching and listening, Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus. Thanks for coming along. Also, if you get a chance, give us a download when you can't catch us live.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so kind of quiet on the coaching front.
Is it?
I'm sure behind the scenes things are happening here. Yeah. Not much to talk about per se, you know, up to date on anything.
I got a thing. Okay, that's good. Go ahead.
Okay, let's go to your thing, and then we'll do my thing.
Okay, my thing is just, Todd McClellan, are we being too dismissive of the idea of Todd McClellan as the head coach of the Leafs?
He's, when you say that, I think people are under the impression that it's Craig Berube or Todd McClellan.
Yeah, but so it feels to me like it's Craig Berube, doesn't it?
Yes.
Like everyone's saying, like, yes. It's, you know, this seems.
But Craig's got a Stanley Cup with St. Louis, and the other guy doesn't have one.
Did he win one as an assistant with the Red Wings in 08?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that count? You know, it's not the same as being a head coach for a team, I suppose.
And who was he working with? Who was he working for?
Babs. Oh.
That's right.
Was that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Babs.
So
you got a Babs disciple working his way.
You okay with that?
Well, here's what I am okay with. Babs has proven right on everything. So coaching wise, he was vindicated.
It just wasn't.
There's pain coming.
Just nothing likable about the man. That's the problem. Problem was he was
ego.
Not saying that coaches need to be liked, but this guy found every reason to make people think that he's one of the worst people they deal with.
Yeah, you can be a tough coach that people like, you know, dread being, you know, when you're coaching them. But at the heart of it, you have to be a good person, have a good heart at the end of it. But
maybe you know what's funny is that was a core tenet of Babs' beliefs. Like
good
he
man.
Knew that. He knew to be
good family
a good man.
Man.
And, and I will say he always treated me wonderfully. Yeah, I liked the man personally.
He didn't want anything out of you though.
Well, that's fair. There's nothing I can do.
He didn't need you. He didn't want you. He didn't, right?
Yeah. But he treated me nice. That's all I'm saying. But anyway, this is not a Babs referendum. McClellan, though.
Yes.
So Craig Berube has a interview in Winnipeg. Came across somewhere. Mm-hmm. He's got an opportunity there. And I don't know. I am not as sure as other people seem to be it'll be Berube over McClellan.
I think with Todd though, there is an underwhelming feeling about his past experiences in Edmonton, San Jose, and LA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And the fact that he was always considered one of the highest paid coaches in the league for a guy that's never got it done as a head coach, that's a big commitment teams made.
Mm-hmm.
$5 million guy. Is he still a $5 million guy?
No, definitely not. But also,
but if you're coming to Toronto, you're thinking $5 million. Are you not?
Well, see, to me, the opportunity to coach in Toronto is worth something. And I would rather coach in Toronto.
This is going to be the, hey, You can do endorsements. You can. There's not, other opportunities.
Somebody called the Canadian Tire guy.
Not other money, but like you become a name that no one will ever forget.
But for a team that has a gazillion dollars, you're going to trade that in for a lesser salary, or are you going to just try to have it the whole cake and eat it too?
Well, would like to try to have the whole cake, but if you're the Leafs and you don't feel like he's worth X, they paid Sheldon Keefe a lot less than a lot of other coaches because they weren't as in demand. And I don't think Todd McClellan is as in demand as Craig Berube.
But Sheldon was also a rookie guy coming in and
hadn't, the one thing that scares me with McClellan is it's not like he hasn't had horses, right? So San Jose Sharks teams he had tons of talent.
Very good.
Oilers had lots of young talent, which that's hard to harness at times. You know, and that's, you would think that's part of coming to Toronto is figuring out what to do with lots of good players.
L.A.? What was the issue there?
I was thinking they don't have enough of that. But then I was going back through his history and I was like, oh yeah, he has had teams with talent, so can't blame it on just a lack of talent. So, yeah, I still think it's somewhat underwhelming. But I don't think that he's miles worse than Craig Berube as a coach.
A message I've been getting a little bit, you know, on Instagram, Twitter, where people will message me about this kind of stuff is there somebody else, like an outside the box hire, like the next, like, is it just have to be?
It can't be another Sheldon Keefe. It has to be
like a hockeyman through and through.
Yes. Classic. It has to be someone who's coached the team, and that's super limiting. I understand.
And it has to be a guy that can, I don't know any other way to say it, but who can be a hard ass on Nylander and Matthews. Yeah. And who knows if Marner or Tavares are there or Morgan. Because
if you're the new guy, you come in, those guys have power over you.
The number one thing that the new guy has to come in is to squeeze the top end guys and make them nervous enough that everybody underneath them are super nervous. If they're not relaxing, then I can't relax.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why
Berube's probably number one, is because we know that he can do that.
Yeah.
Like, we should find that clip of him as early as this year where he talked about the Blues without passion.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You remember that one?
No. Well, yeah, it was going around on Twitter yesterday, but he's just like basically saying that they didn't play with any passion. Yeah. They didn't play hard. Like, he's a very, very honest man.
He has the passion.
He probably does have the passion, I would say. I think if you're going to, the only really free agent coach that's going to come in and, you know, not be too, like, have the players have more power is probably Berube.
Yeah.
Because if you look at
McClellan, is
McClellan going to come in and be like, tell him he's going
to
have more.
No, he still feels lucky to be here.
I agree.
Right? That's how that would feel.
So now the more that we talk this out, it really does feel like Berube or bust. If you're just going to go McClellan, why
are they letting him go have an interview in Winnipeg? Why don't they just pay the man
that's interesting.
His money?
That's really interesting. Right. The other one, too, is New Jersey. Now, if you were to ask Craig Berube, what would his number one wish be? It would be to have coached the Philadelphia Flyers next year. That's number one.
Think so?
I know so.
Okay.
That's not available. Right? Tortorella staying?
Well, yeah. Okay.
And he wants to coach as early as next year.
But he also wants to maybe move into management.
But it's not happening next year.
Enough. Okay.
It's not happening soon enough.
Mm.
So does Craig want to wait to see where Tortorella goes for another year and get his dream job of being the Philadelphia Flyer head coach? Or does he take the next best option? Mm-hmm. So,
well, I mean, I don't know if I want that either.
The guy doesn't want to be here?
Well, no, it's not that he doesn't want to be here, but there's somewhere else that he'd rather be.
Well, come on. It's like being drafted as an 18-year-old, and it's not your favorite team, you're still happy
you're
to go somewhere. They don't.
Yeah.
It's not like Sammy's not going to try when he becomes your head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's not the Flyers.
I know, but I mean, hearing that, it's a little jarring. No? Anyways.
That's good. Maybe he won't be so reverential about the whole thing.
The only thing I wonder now is if, you know, the New Jersey job, because, you know, he lives 50 minutes from.
Does he live in Philly in the offseason?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Would he rather just be close to home and take the New Jersey job?
You know, when I saw that he was going for this Winnipeg interview, I was like, you know, the man is it's not like the Leafs can make him do anything. you know, the Winnipeg, he's from Manitoba, if I'm not, no, Alberta, right? That's originally Alberta. But, like, he, it makes sense for him to go see what the offers sound like and look like. You don't get that opportunity to be a UFA in demand very often. So, yeah, I'm sure he'll hear the interview, you know, hear the offers.
That's not the only option, too. There's Seattle out there.
Yeah.
They need a coach.
That exists.
So what is happening here? Are they all going around and, I don't know, making everybody feel nervous that when the music stops, some teams are going to be left without a chair?
Yes.
So I think, I mean, when it comes, when one guy gets hired here for one of the vacancies, is that going to make everybody move really quickly? Like, is there going to be a domino effect, like the trade deadline when everyone's like waiting and then the first trade happens and then everyone starts doing a big trade?
It's funny, like, you know, because one of a head coach has retired, he's not going to work anymore, that being Bonus from Winnipeg, you know, and a lot of teams are like the Leafs and they don't want to give a new guy an opportunity. Because, you know, guys tend to have to learn on the job. And frankly, you watch Knobloch give McDavid and Draisaitl 30 minutes ice time last game. Like, yeah, there's a learning curve. I remember Sheldon doing that with Marner and Matthews for a while. So, you know, there's just not that many guys that you would consider, you know, Keefe now is available. But Berube, McClellan, like, who else is there? We do have the Berube clip. If you want to hear Berube talking about the passion.
Yeah, well, let's hear Craig. Let's hear Sam's future coach.
I don't know.
Torpo had an outstanding game. Tucker, Bucci had an outstanding game. Benner, you know, we have some guys that are, you know, it's not, we have a lot of guys compete. Like, there's a handful of guys really competing and doing the job. But, again, you know, our best players aren't even close.
Aren't even close. That's news here, boys. That's news. doing a half hour aren't even close show.
And let's lead with a Kippers Clipper from Craig Berube calling out his best players.
The podcast title is called "We're Not Even Close."
Yeah,
like, it's,
it's a so ordeal.
That's what people are, I think, interested in. Mm-hmm.
But maybe if he does it enough, it won't be such a big story.
Yeah, I think the lack of it from, because did Babs do that kind of stuff in the media? Like, I have a hard time remembering him.
You got to remember, Babs was still in that kind of development stage with a lot of these guys. Yeah. It wasn't easy when they're like 23 to call them out, 24 still.
20 but, when he was here.
But
right?
Keefe,
20.
I mean, Keefe did it notably a few times and then
backtracked.
Apologies.
There was a big story here when Randy Carlyle said that James Reimer was just okay. Remember, just okay became like harsh criticism of the goaltender. It's like, God, tough mark.
So, but how much do you think, like, we just played that clip there. We talk about how big a news that would be. Like, if you're Craig Berube, and I guess that's kind of would be similar in Winnipeg, maybe not to the same obvious as Toronto, but like, am I going to be able to coach as hard as I want to through the media? Like, is everything I say going to be a referendum? Like, do you think you think he's comfortable with that?
I don't think he's
afraid of much.
It's
something that he's definitely has to
weigh at
for sure.
Okay.
And it is. It's, you'll never, that's the beast of this market, is that you'll have to put up with crappy shows like ours.
Yeah. And you can put extra on your players' plates by being uncareful with your words. Uncareful? Doesn't sound right. But, you know, like, if you say something a little casual and all of a sudden we make a big deal out of it and everyone else picks it up and whatever, the player's asking, you're answering questions, like, it's different how to manage how you talk in the media.
The other thing, too, is when Sheldon did speak and then sometimes later you get a different vibe from him, you weren't sure if it was just Sheldon making that decision or Kyle ended up going back to him and saying, you got to fix that. That was no good and you got to go back and try to change that tone and all of that. And you're like, and then he always spoke of we and we'll decide collectively. And it was like, I don't know how much.
There's a lot of we there.
Yeah. How much power you really had over your comments. Yeah. Are those your comments, yours alone? When you backpedaled, was that because you were told to backpedal?
I mean, the show that we've referenced probably more than any was that, the 24/7 or whatever they did, that Amazon series. And you remember when Matthews made, like, alluded to the fact that they weren't opening it up, that they were playing too tight. And he, like, said something in the media. Keefe was just, like, apoplectic about it. He's like, oh, I'm getting killed in the narrative. I'm getting killed in the narrative. Like, I remember him going crazy and then having to have a meeting with Matthews about it and all this stuff. So, like, the narratives matter here. And one little thing you say, and it's our fault, I'll fully say it, but that's the market, baby. This is what we do. it gets twisted. That's got to be something that's scary for a coach, man.
I don't see Craig Berube saying something and then a day or two days later walking anything back. Once it's out there, it's out there. And I would think that Craig would make that fairly clear to Brendan and Keith Pelly and Brad Treliving that, you know, when I say something, unless it's ridiculously obvious that I need to go back, then I'm sticking with my words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if it isn't him, like Woodcroft, I guess, is the guy who's available. Like, you know, like
Gallant
hasn't come up much for a guy who interests me. I think he'd be good.
I think
short term, Gerard is one of those guys where it's like, I'm not wasting my time. I'm not wasting your time. Like, you're not good enough, and I'm going to bench you, or I'm going to cut your ice time, or you're in the stands.
Yeah.
You got a problem with that?
Is he a fallback to Berube then? By the way, we will eventually decide how we're going to say Berube on this show.
Whether Berube?
It's Berube or Berube.
I think it's Berube.
I don't know. I only played. I've known the guy for like 30 years.
But if he gets a job, I promise we'll have a consensus way to pronounce it on the show.
Fair enough.
All right. Are we through the coaching section?
No. So how many teams need coaches right now? I said Seattle. I said
Seattle,
Toronto,
Winnipeg, New Jersey, Toronto.
Four.
Is that it?
Okay. Now you're Craig Berube. Let's assume that Craig's the top of the list now for everybody and for anybody. Yeah. Okay. If you were just to look down rosters, which team would give me the best chance to go win a Stanley Cup the quickest?
So Jersey's close, but I don't think they haven't done anything. They missed the playoffs last year. I know they're missing Dougie Hamilton, but it's the Leafs.
So the Leafs are the most attractive out of any team, including Winnipeg.
I think Matthews and Nylander have a lot to do with that you have these sort of like, you know, 100-point plus guys. You know, Winnipeg has a lot of good players, but
I'm not sure I'd put the Leafs.
I'd go Devils there. Probably.
Oh. Who put who?
Devils.
Devils are a fine pick because you get Dougie Hamilton back.
Seattle's not bad either. No. If they can go and spend, they need some stars though. They need to go UFA.
Pop out as a first round loss team to me. Like they're not talk about you need stars. That's tough to come by.
And what are the Leafs?
Well, so far they have been. But at least you have the top end guys.
You've got Matthews and Nylander.
Yeah. Well, and whatever you still have,
and
Mitch Marner.
An underwhelming.
I don't. Your watch talking to you.
It just keeps talking.
Get Siri a mic.
You've got an underwhelming blue line.
Yeah.
And you've got no goalie that you can count on.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, you're not sure about Wohl's injury or whatever, but I think the Leafs are a good team next year. I really think there's a lot of pieces there, and whatever.
It's a fork in the road.
Big decisions. There's 12 UFAs.
Big decisions and decisions that you cannot make the same mistakes that you've seen in the last 5 or 7 years. You can't. The Leafs are at some point when you look at all the mistakes, and I don't want to crap all over Kyle Dubas here, but
you don't.
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. But like, eventually it catches up to you, and you just wonder: is that the next couple of years? Or is it beyond that?
I think next year you're getting more from Matthew Nyes. I think, we have 35 points this year. He's better than that. Nick Robertson finally looks like he can shoot it in the net. Bobby McMahon finally found himself. Benoit's a nice third pair guy. Like, I think you have this uprising, this like second wave of players, and you're going to have a lot of money to spend. I think it's very attractive.
Yeah.
Go ahead and, you know.
I think you are onto something, though, Kipper, that, you know, you got to nail these trades. If you're talking about trading Mitch Marner, you're talking about trading Tavares, you're talking about, if you want to be as good as you've been in the past few years, you have to nail these trades. And I think any conversation that you're having with a head coach, it's kind of a complicated one because you don't exactly know what your team's going to look like at the start of the season, right? Like if they're having an interview with Berube right now or Berube, I'm going Berube. If you're having the conversation with Berube right now and you're interviewing him and he's asking you back questions, like, what are they telling them about who's going to be on the team? Like, I guess you're just telling them, you're saying, you have Matthews, you have Nylander, you have this, but it's kind of a weird team in flux that may be hard to sell. to a coach. No,
you're not wrong that if you're Berube, it's a little bit like being like speed dating in these interviews and being like, oh, this one's got a lot of red flags. This one's complicated. There's drama here.
They lack assets. Like, even if you trade Marner, maybe it's a first and two, a blue chip prospect.
Yeah,
that might not come around to help you in the next 2 years.
The cap space is there to do something with too. I get the point you're making is that the Leafs are not as attractive as maybe some of the other spots, but I think you're wrong.
Benoit was terrific as a third pair, but they got five and a half third pair guys.
Yeah.
They don't have a one.
Yeah.
We're established with that.
No, for sure. Right? Like, but like, you know, Riley's still there, and they've been 100 and whatever point team every year with Riley as their one. McCabe took a step this year for me.
They need two good guys in the back end.
Yes,
yeah.
For sure. I'm not saying they don't have needs, but I'm saying New Jersey had 81 points this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you throw a goalie in there and what do you get, 91? Like they got work to do there.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And I think they're just two teams that are at very different points of where they're at.
You can see New Jersey being a 105 point team.
Absolutely.
It's not out of the question.
They should have had Markstrom there.
Calgary screwed that up,
eh?
Calgary did?
Oh yeah.
What do you mean?
They botched the trade.
Too much.
Yeah.
Well, you heard, was it in New Jersey where their GM said that they don't want to be, you know, basically held a gunpoint?
Yes.
You know, when they know that a player wants to go there and they didn't feel like it was reasonable what the ask was, which good for them for not just panic trading and hanging on to Markstrom, but.
Yeah, exactly.
Seems like this summer he'll go.
All right. We're going to also have Dave Jackson on. Former NHL referee, rules analyst for ESPN, and I don't know, are we talking about just another playoff where there's some questionable calls, or does this one seem to be a little bit...
Before we go to that, can I ask you something that we talked about with Bukala yesterday?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, it's been a huge thing in Leafs Nation right now, is that Easton Cowan, where... I don't know if you saw any of the highlights of the game last night from the Oshawa Generals.
Four helpers?
Yeah, but did you see the game at all or see what happened? They were down. The Oshawa
6-2.
Oshawa Generals were up 6-2 with 12 minutes left, and they lost 7-6 in double overtime. I can't imagine a more heartbreaking loss than that for the Jennies. But Easton Cowan is a super-duper star in the OHL. He looks unbelievable. And I think what you were talking about yesterday with Bukala, this is just the next in a line of guys that, like, we're talking about how they're going to need contributions from people who come up, and you're talking about like the McMahons of the world and the Robertsons of the world. I'm very interested to see next year what the conversation is around him if he has a good camp, because I think it's going to be a very interesting one.
He'll stick around for the first 10 games, and then you'll gauge him. And in all probability, he'll probably stay. I just don't know.
Stay with Toronto?
Yeah, listen, he's good enough. I think he's good really enough. But there's a big difference between being good enough to stay and then being
helping a team
win, difference maker when you need it come April.
Yeah.
And I'll just go back to Nyes. Nyes has made great progress. He's a good player.
Yep.
But not good enough this year to have been a difference maker.
For sure. So you
And he's 220.
Yeah.
This guy's $175, $180.
Mm-hmm.
Big difference.
Absolutely. And the Robertson things there, too, where he was a superstar in junior, comes in, it's tough for him, it's taken a long time. I want Leafs Nation to just, which they won't, and they won't listen to me, but just pump the brakes a little bit on all these things.
Just look at their history.
He's got 11 points in three
pumping
games.
Brakes.
11 gonna, points in three games in the final.
They're not pumping brakes. They're just going to hit the gas and then drive it over a cliff.
Anyways, I just thought it was a great, great convo you had with Bukala yesterday. It was relevant because of what the Knights did last night.
But like, go back in their history. Like, Justin Poggi, wasn't he the next Felix Podvin?
Oh, yeah. But you know what? This is not a Leafs exclusive. Everyone, you know, has this prospect fantasy thing going on.
Except everyone else has like one or two reporters.
Yeah.
Toronto's got 1,000.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so just shout out to my Jennies fans. Can't imagine how bad that burns. 6-2. Sorry to those young men.
Catch Dale Hunter every once in a while just giving it to his bench, too.
Oh, yeah. What about him as a coach, Toronto?
But I think he like, you want to talk about holding London Knights accountable? Yeah. That's what that guy does.
Yeah. Did he do it?
That program, every 3 years, they're looking Memorial Cup. Every 3 years.
As good a program as exists.
And he played Ovi 12 minutes in his prime in a playoff game once.
But
held them accountable.
Absolutely.
None of that lollygagging.
Absolutely.
So Dale's a good coach. I think he'd make a great pro coach.
I get that message and I get that text on here so much about Dale Hunter as a coach, at least. Mm-hmm. It's nonstop. So anyway, I thought I'd bring it up. So what do you want to say about the referee?
I just wanted, I know we're going to have him on in 5 minutes, but just again, your thoughts watching every night, is it a hotter button topic than previous years, or is it just the same?
Every year it's the same because every fan needs every call. Every game is so important. Every power play is so important. So every whistle is scrutinized. That's not icing. It wasn't offside. You know, so these guys are just held to a higher standard.
I think having two Canadian teams playing in a second round series adds to the heat a ton. Yeah. Where it's like these games are so high stakes and there's so many eyes on them and these fans are just rabid and at each other's throats that when you see you have especially with Boston, too, where the crybaby market, there's one bad call goes against them for the first time in their team's history, that they just blow up over it and their general manager whines to the media about refereeing. That adds to the fan as well.
Like, this is the big bad Bruins are usually on the other side of just don't talk about it.
They have gotten every call for 100 years. And the one time it goes against them, it's a referendum.
The Boston Bruins crying like this.
Neither have I.
They're on the wrong side of it, and I think that's a bad sign for them.
So, and I think that's part of it. So you have these big markets where there's controversial calls in every playoff hockey game. There's these big markets, and there's Canadian teams, and there's tons of people talking about it. So I think that gets brought up. So interesting to get Dave's perspective on that.
For sure.
Did I get your views, guys, on whether or not they should speak to the media?
I don't think you have solicited our views on that.
We're going to get Dave Jackson's for sure.
Okay.
But your thoughts about officials making themselves available.
We mentioned yesterday that it's just going to be a reciting of the statement they put out. They're going to try to say as little as possible. It's such a subjective, job that I don't think guys are going to come out and say, I didn't see it. You know, like, I don't know. I don't know that we're going to get more out of it, but if it makes people happy, maybe have them do it. I don't really care about it, to be honest.
I think it's stupid. I think if you have the refs come out and talk about it, you're just going to make people more mad because they're not going to come out
and like the explanation.
Well, they're not like, what player, I mean, outside of some guys will be like, I was my fault, but or want a coach, like outside of very rare opportunities, these guys are human. They're out there in the middle of the fight, they're not going to be like, yeah, it was all my fault. You're never going to get the chunk of meat that you want. But anyways, talk to Dave about it.
I just think it would add to the chaos.
Which I like. I'm fine with. You'd have to give the refs a little bit more money, wouldn't you? Because
NHL, you're fine with it as someone in the media.
Yes.
You're just not fine with it if you ran the NHL officiating department.
Correct.
Or Gary Bettman, where you just... It's another thing where I think it's just
worry about them talking.
Pouring gasoline on a fire.
Hey, here's a request for whoever coaches the Leafs next or the PR department. Can the assistant coaches say something someday? Could we talk to some of the most interesting, informed people who help run the team and steer the ship? Could we have got Guy Boucher to tell us about his power play and what's going on? Could I get Van Rijn and the D? Could we get some thoughts?
Yeah. No. I think the assistants used to talk, didn't they?
They did.
Toronto media? I feel like that used to happen.
Pre-Lou, I think.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it did.
When?
No.
Pre-Lou?
I think so. I
feel like it used to happen.
I think, but generally speaking, like there is no profile for assistant coaches in the NHL. There isn't. Like, think about it.
I mean, there's no profile.
I'm saying, when was the last assistant coach where you got to hear him and you got to get to know him?
Right.
When was the last when you said, oh, he's an up-and-comer, or this guy's going to be a rock star, and they're not going to be able to keep him?
Didn't get to say anything.
How about that assistant coach? They're not going to be able to keep him. Wait, when the first job gets hired, and it's like, they're all kind of, they've around the league, they put their thumbs on them. And it's, I think it's
EJ
just
Smith, Spencer Carberry, a couple guys.
I think it just comes down to one thing: the insecurity of a head coach.
Yes,
that's it.
I agree.
I don't need to hear from this guy. I don't need people to think he's smarter than me. He's better than me. Why isn't he the head coach? Don't get to know him.
Gatekeeping.
Right? No?
Yes,
can you think
right.
of anything else?
No, I can't. Outside of the PR department doesn't want him to contradict something the coach said, then it creates a story, and so they'd rather just it's simpler to not have them say anything ever. That's what the answer is.
Let's hit a break.
Yep.
I wanted to ask you something else, but I forgot. I'm going to remember during the break.
Yeah, you'll remember for sure.
Okay, when we return, Dave Jackson, former NHL referee, also at the top of the hour, Luke Gastic, who's done a terrific job in Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, he'll join us. And then Trip Tracy, Carolina Hurricane, Valley Sports Television, talking how Carolina right back in it with a big win at MSG. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. Let's welcome in Dave Jackson, former NHL referee. Shut it down when? 2018? 17?
18.
18. All right. Not bad. Now doing a terrific job as a rules analyst for ESPN. So, Jax, let me ask you just in terms of those last few years that you're an NHL referee and you make a controversial call in an NHL playoff series. How much were you aware of the noise around you and your call back then?
Oh, very little. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. You know when you've made a call that's controversial and you beat yourself up and you lay awake and you stare at the ceiling and whatever. But completely off social media. I wouldn't read newspapers. I wouldn't watch sports news. And definitely didn't go on social media. So really had no idea how big the buzz was around calls I made or calls I missed.
So I played with teammates that would go publicly and say, I don't read newspapers, and they couldn't go into the John Stall without a Toronto Sun in their lap. So what do you think about the officials today? Are they on social media? Are they watching? Are they listening? Are they getting feedback from their friends? Just no different than players?
Well, it's a different generation, and I know guys during the season. Some guys do. It's usually the younger guys. They're on social media, but I know the veterans tell them come playoff time that it's soul fucking. Don't do it to yourself. Stay off it. Now, whether they listen to the veteran guys, that I mean, I know a guy like Wes McCauley. I'm not even. I think he probably still has a flip phone, so I know he's on social media. But whether the young guys listen or not, I would hope they do because, you know, and unlike a player, when you score a hat trick, you're going to read good things about yourself. When you do a good game, you're still not going to have good things said about you. So there's really no upside to trying to mine your name on social media to see what they're saying about you.
So let's get your take on this postseason. Does it feel like there's more noise, the usual amount? How would you compare this postseason to a usual playoff run from a referee's perspective?
I can only really go from the last 3 years that I've been with ESPN because I've become a lot more social media savvy. I really don't know what went on in the past, but I look at it now and I say, wow, if all this was going on when I was working, boy, was I oblivious to it. And a good thing I was because like it's out of control. And I don't even mean like from the media standpoint, I'm just talking from the fan standpoint. The conspiracy theories and the things they come up with are just, and they take on a life of their own. And it's just crazy. And then from the media standpoint, I'd say it's been pretty consistent the last three seasons from what I've seen.
Jack's just based on a controversial goal from Sam Bennett in Boston. General manager Don Sweeney decided to make a calculated appearance where he said officials should have to address the media after controversial calls. To that, you say?
I say definitely no with a caveat. I mean, like, you think about, and I saw his press conference. I thought he was well-spoken, and I could see there was some frustration in his voice. You look at a press conference post-game. When a team wins, everybody's happy, everybody's jovial. They usually bring the players out that had the most impact. You know, a guy gets a hat trick, they're going to talk to him about his great game he played, right? When a team loses a game, it's seldom about the player that made the big mistake or fed the pizza out into his own slot that cost the winning goal. It's usually teammates come out and they talk about, you know, what do you guys need to do to win the next game? Like, what do you guys need to do? What does a team need to do to win the next game? It's seldom, hey, how come you screwed the game up and how come you lost the game for your team? Mm-hmm. That doesn't really happen that often. They don't make players available. It's funny. I was reading on Twitter. I was reading, I think it was Eric Engels, who said that media requested Connor Hellebuyck after the series loss and said the Jets wouldn't provide him. They wouldn't make him available. So they always say the players have to come out and talk, but I think the teams kind of protect players to a certain degree. There's nobody there to protect the referees. So I think you'd have a very confrontational atmosphere. I don't think it would be good for anybody, but my caveat is I think there could be a compromise if maybe we had a pool reporter who would go into the referee's locker room in a non-confrontational atmosphere and ask the questions in a much more, you know, friendly environment. And then he could make those answers available to the other reporters.
That makes sense. Might as well get your take on some specific moments in the postseason. In the second half of the show here, we'll be doing a lot of Vancouver-Edmonton talk. I'm sure you saw Zadorov cross-check on McDavid, Soucy cross-check on McDavid, Hyman cross-check on Zadorov. What were your thoughts on what occurred and how the league handled it in terms of fines and suspensions?
You know what? That's above my pay grade. Do I think Soucy was trying to get him in the face? I don't. I think he was trying to retaliate from the slash on the leg. And he was just, the planets aligned. He was cross-checked by Zadorov from behind. He went down. He got him in the face. He got suspended for it. You've got to be responsible for your stick. And, you know, let's face it, a one-game suspension in the playoffs is like a two or three regular season suspension. So I think they got it right.
Hey, Dave, when we talk about the regular season towards the playoffs, we understand that the stakes are high and then a bad decision, a bad play could end your season. I get that. But as far as officiating from a regular season to a playoff game, is there anything that is noticeably different to an official that can cause him to feel, other than the pressure that's out there? Is it harder to officiate a playoff game than it is a regular season game outside of the pressure that you feel for, you know, one mistake and it can cost you?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you must look back on the emotions that you had, like your first playoff game. And I remember doing, like, my first several years in the league was back, it was one-man system. And I was standby for several seasons, and I thought I was ready for my first playoff game. And I went out and actually did my first playoff game. And I mean, like, my hair was on fire. I could not believe the difference between a regular season game. A player is going 110% every single shift. And what I came to learn as I became a little more experienced in the league is that regular season players take lazy penalties. Players take retaliatory penalties. Come playoffs, if the game's close, you're not going to see those type of penalties. You don't really have to worry so much about retaliatory penalties and lazy penalties. It's more about guys trying too hard and accidentally tripping a guy. It's, mistake-type penalties, trying to gain an edge, just going. So you have to sort of sit back and breathe. You can't overreact. Yeah, and it's okay to realize that, you know, if your arm goes up a second late, better that than overreact and call something that's not a penalty. Just take that extra second breathe and make sure you've actually seen what you thought you saw.
Yeah, in my limited refereeing experience, that was the hardest thing, was actually allowing yourself a moment to kind of process what happened. Sometimes players go, it took him a couple seconds to put his hand up. It's like, well, good. You know, it's okay to have a think about it. So in terms of having to think about things, there are certain players, and I'm talking about Sam Bennett now, who develop a reputation for certain tricks, certain sort of cheap shots. Bennett now has landed a couple of sneaky right hooks on a hit. How often in a game are you aware of the tendencies of the guys on the ice and kind of looking out for, oh, I know this Marchand, he likes to go low on guys, those sort of tendencies of dirtier players?
I think as referees, I think you do it all season long. I think the referees are really good at, they get updates every day. This is starting from like day one of the regular season. They get updates, lineups, who's playing every game. You get to the game an hour and a half, 2 hours before the game, and guys sit there in the room. They drink a coffee, you know, they get, you know, their, you know, long johns and stuff, and they look down the lineup and they talk about players. The linesmen will do that. They'll talk about centermen. Which guys give you a hard time? Which guys try and cheat? So that they know that, and they give each other intel. The referees do the same thing. They go, okay, we've got these four or five guys that have certain tendencies. There's four or five guys in the other team that have tendencies. The last thing you want to do is prejudge. You don't want to go out and pick on a guy, but you want to know, listen, when this certain guy is on the ice, and it could be anybody in all 32 teams, when he's on the ice, make sure your antenna's up. Don't miss something. Mm-hmm. And I think guys are pretty good at doing that.
What about when it comes to embellishing and just – are there some officials that say, I don't care, I'm not giving you the benefit of the doubt?
I would hope not, because I think embellishment is the toughest call for a referee to make. You've got to get inside the guy's head and determine, did he fall naturally or did he fall unnaturally? And, I mean, basically, you know, when you call a tripping penalty or a slashing penalty, you're looking at it and saying, okay, you did it. I have no problem giving you a penalty. When you call an embellishment penalty, what you're saying to the guy is you're trying to cheat the game here. You're not being honorable, and I'm making that determination. And, I mean, that's some heavy stuff when you think about it. So I don't think guys want to go out there and call embellishment penalties. So I know we'll see them sometimes. They go, well, why didn't they call embellishment there? Because you've got to make sure. You've got to know in your gut that guy's trying to beat the game before you call an embellishment penalty on him. And even if he has a reputation, I think you always want to give the player benefit of the doubt until he crosses that line.
Dave, last question before I let you go. I just want to know why the refs always screw the Maple Leafs.
Sam wants to know.
That's on behalf of my Leafs Hour listeners, by the way.
Yes. Like, what's going on here?
The funny thing is, that's the same question I get from every single fan base I do radio with.
I would have felt like a traitor if I didn't ask.
Not alone.
Dave, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time. Have a great call tonight on your show.
Yeah, we got a doubleheader. Should be fun. Thanks, right, guys, for having me on.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Former National Hockey League official, Dave Jackson. So,
have you ref before?
No.
No.
No. Nothing serious.
I did a handful.
You tried it?
Yeah.
And you liked it?
No, I'm here.
I did it.
Yeah?
Yeah. When I was a kid, did it for like house league and on weekends.
All
for
I'll say is, it's very hard.
It was like $25 a game when I was in high school. I was like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
3 hours
see,
of work.
I could see parents following you guys to the parking lot.
Yeah.
It wasn't that serious. I ref lacrosse, which was way, way scarier and like definitely had moments like that. But reffing hockey sucks. I don't know why anyone would ever do it.
I just remember like quickly making calls being like, that's not the right call. You know, like you can't put your arm up then and be like, yeah, you know, actually, I don't think it was. Yeah, that I
think
about
thing,
it.
The decisiveness you have to have where it's like calling
it. There's
got to
be times you put your hand up, you're like, ah.
And then if you put it back down, then you're dead.
Yeah. I thought Dave was really good.
Yeah, I thought,
just thinking about like throwing the officials to the wolves after a game and no one there to protect
you. Right.
He's right.
Like you can't
just be like,
you're going to put them out in front of the Boston rabid media? They're like
throwing, like, what do you call that? The meat to the sharks there?
Chum?
Chum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, chum.
Chum.
That's meat.
I just would like to update So I know you guys don't like
the World Championships. This is good.
You guys don't like the World Championships.
No, we're fine with it. We're just saying it's at a stupid time of the year.
You make fun of me every year for telling how much I love this tournament.
It's just a stupid time of the year to have them.
So Canada was playing Team Austria today. And they went into the third period with a 6-1 lead. They blew that lead. 6-6 goes to overtime. And who shoots it in the net to win it?
John Tavares.
The captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs, the captain of Team Canada.
There you go.
That's leadership. Hey.
Instead of the golden goal, it's the tinfoil goal.
That's the leadership.
Avoid a referendum goal.
So there you go.
There you go.
If you're going to be there, make a difference.
Exactly.
I don't think there's a more disgusting result in the history of Canadian hockey than blowing a 6-1 lead to Austria.
So Binnington is our Olympic goalie?
Yeah, I guess so.
Face-off for nation.
I thought it was maybe going to be Skinner. I thought it was going to be Skinner. He was looking hot for a while there, and he got replaced by Pickard tonight. I don't know, boys. Anyways.
You want to get a couple sound bites in before we go to break?
Well, we could save that for the national hour, but yeah. What do you want to do? Do you want to do Vancouver here, or do you want to just...
Well, you want to just Susie suspension? No shock at one game, right? For cross-checking the best player in the world?
No shock. I know that Canuck fans are apoplectic at the idea that Hyman would come in and basically drill Zadorov in the mouth, and there's not a word about that. Susie has been full-on suspended for this. Like, I think there's some real frustration at what's going on here.
Absolutely.
Who do you cross-check?
Not Nikita Zadorov, but Connor McDavid.
Yeah. Do you want to hear Zadorov's?
Hyman.
Oh, Hyman.
Yeah, Hyman came
Hyman
flying in.
Zadorov.
Yeah.
Oh, in the Zadorov.
Face.
Okay.
Which is why we have a great quote on this.
Yeah. Do you want to save it for the national hour? Or do you want to play now?
Okay, no, we'll save it for the national hour.
Okay, we'll save it.
Because we got Vancouver.
Here's what Zadorov said. He said, I don't make enough money for the league.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
What can Treliving do to get this man in Toronto? How much is he going to have to pay him to be a Toronto Maple Leaf? Zadorov.
I would think he
put in the last month $1 million a year in his pocket.
Zadorov?
Yeah.
I think he went from
4-2-5 to 5-2-5.
Yeah. For how long?
Give him TJ Brody's deal. Give him 4x5.
He's pretty young, though. I think it's going to take more than four on free. How old is he?
29?
Yeah, he's pretty young. So I don't.
He can get 5 or 6 years, I think.
That's, to me, the most.
He would still make me nervous.
For
sure. Of course. But if there's one thing that I trust Treliving to do,
is overpay.
I mean, that's for sure. But I think he's had a really good decor in Calgary. Mm-hmm. He built a solid decor with a bunch of really good players, but. I thought that was their strength, right? Like, how many times we talked about their decor being one of the best in the league, and he was there and he built it. So,
Zadorov, Hanifin, Anderson. I love Rasmus Anderson.
I feel like I trust him to build a decor, and there's a lot of good free agents. Like, there's Montour, there's Pesci, there's Chatfield, there's Zadorov.
There's guys out there. I would go get Chatfield before I would get Zadorov.
You think the Leafs are light on third pair guys?
Buddy, this guy's top four all day long.
Ooh, I like that.
Okay. All day long.
And shoots right, too.
He is not. This guy can play 18, 20 minutes, and he's on the ice at the most critical times.
Bad
he is the
you.
Biggest sleeper out there.
And Carolina is just than the team Pesci. To be aware of that.
I'm telling you, he's better than Pesci.
What?
Yeah.
That's a monster.
I'm the Leafs, I go get him before I get Brett Pesci.
Wow.
And he might be cheaper.
Sure hope so.
So, yeah. That's quite a statement by you.
Watch him.
I know.
Just watch him.
I watched the Carolina Hurricanes look
Make
really
happy,
good last
happy.
Night.
Bring us Nick Hague and Jalen Chatfield.
Carolina's looking good after they got swept.
All right. We're still getting started here. After the break, Luke Gazdick will join us. Tee up tonight's games and Trip Tracy as well. We'll talk Carolina and that blue line. Can they come back all the way? Halfway there now. That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.